It is always good to worship at Met, whether in person or online. And as a preacher, it is always a privilege to stand in this pulpit. Thank you for the invitation today. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts lead each one of us to fresh inspiration and new graces. Amen. The General Council National Office of our denomination has a generic info@ email box to which all manner of questions are submitted. Most of them are simple routine questions like, Reverend Aitchison baptized me, where can I find him now? Or, I've moved to a new community, what is the local United Church? Some questions are less routine and less expected, and they often get sent to me as other duties as assigned. Like a Canadian now living in a Southern American state asking us to procure for him a particular boxer short that only Brooks Brothers Canada carries. He assured us that he would reimburse us for the purchase and the postage. More seriously, another wrote recently, what has God done for you lately? I'll recount what God has done. He has visited you with floods, with famine, with drought, earthquakes, typhoons, hurricanes, wildfires, and the list went on for a full screen. He, and I'm assuming he because of the predominance of violent images, concludes with a friend like God who needs enemies. We would be better off without God at all. The writer makes a lengthy argument. If indeed these catastrophes, and those that we would add to the list ourselves, are the work of God, we would be better off without God. Ancient experiences of God were often grounded in a dreadful fear of the one who was thought to bring the earthquake and the famine and the drought. God was experienced as both vengeful and demanding. And in order to assuage the divine anger and fend off total destruction, blood sacrifices and burnt offerings were lifted up. And not only natural disasters were suffered. Still in contracts today, we refer to acts of God. But there were also devastating personal afflictions described in the scriptures. The lectionary readings this summer are not the stuff of barefoot beach reading. As Nancy reminded us last summer when introducing the readings, King David, the gentle kid who lulled King Saul into quiet during his rages and rants, grows up to be himself an adulterer and a murderer. This week, his own son, Absalom, turns against him, overthrows his throne, and then he himself dies at the hands of one of David's commanders. Oh, how David mourns the death of his son. The 1905 edition of the Cambridge Bible for Schools and Colleges references the extravagance of his grief and his guilt for the fruit and punishment of his own crimes. There are the times in our own lives when we have been subjected to the consequences of our actions or to the simple unfolding of life in ways not anticipated or prepared for. They've led us to confoundment, despair, and disbelief. Melinda Calway's watercolor discord on today's bulletin cover depicts with discordant shapes and conflicting colors, the turmoil and trouble that we see in these stories and that we see in our own lives. The psalmist pleads, out of the depths I cry to you, O Lord. The Christian tradition, anxious to ground Christ in what was known, invested deeply in a theology of a sacrificial lamb being offered as ransom for the sinfulness of humanity. Nothing less than God's own child could be enough. Nothing less than God's own child, brutalized as only humanity can brutalize humanity, could serve as a sacrifice to win God's forgiveness. You know, when terrible things happen, we need to be able to attribute responsibility for them to someone. We need to think that there is something that we can do to influence the one who holds that responsibility. But casting God in this role makes God little more than a demon driven by a vicious temper, needing to be held in fear and dread, and needing, ultimately, to execute his own child in order to be convinced not to condemn humanity to eternal damnation. As the emailer writes, with a friend like this God, who needs enemies? Earlier this summer, walking my dog along Queen Street East in the beach where I live, I watched a man stapling to the utility poles at the head of Kew Gardens, soiled, flattened pizza boxes. You see a lot of things in Queen Street East, but after he left, I stepped up to see what was written on them. His was not a lament at the ravages of God, but a call for God to ravage and to destroy all manner of people he believes are not in God's favor. Trust me, many of us qualify for the ravages that he was calling. The God of revenge, condemnation, and torment is clearly his God. So I think it's time we plumb the depths of the nature of God and what it is we really do believe and know and trust about God. And meet the one who is described in the books of Exodus, Numbers, Nehemiah, the Psalms, Joel, Jonah, Nahum. You get the idea, a lot of them. The God who is known as compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness. It's time that we gave attention to the one who, driven to anger and frustration by our broken and willful ways, is compelled to respond in ways that we know only too well, but instead says, I will not carry out my fierce anger, nor will I turn and devastate Ephraim, for I am God, not human, the Holy One among you. I will not come in wrath. In the book of Isaiah, God is described as a mother who cannot forget the child at her breast. To do so would cause God not just emotional pain, but physical, aching pain. For God, like a mother, needs her own. In chapter 30 of Jeremiah, somewhere between verses 15 and 16, we see a transformation where God reaches a new level of compassion and resolve. The cry from humanity pushes God to new sensibilities and propels God to announce that God will restore our health and heal our wounds. From us, in response, will come songs of thanksgiving and rejoicing. Fast forward a couple centuries to the Gospels. And instead of seeing a God who demands nothing less than the sacrifice of God's own child, meet a God who is taken to the very edge, where it seems that there is no longer any reason or meaning, where it seems there is no God, driven to the point of no longer believing in the redeeming capacity of God's own grace and goodness in the face of the violence of a twisted humanity. It's not surprising that there is very little market for this God. For if God is vulnerable, then how can God rescue us from our vulnerabilities? If God suffers and experiences pain, then how can God save us from our broken world? And if God needs us and can actually be moved by our cry, then this can't be a God. We don't need a God who sorrows and longs. We need a God who is powerful enough to change everything that is wrong and destroy everything that is evil. Writer David Buttrick asks, what are we to do with a God who, like a mother, constantly self-sacrifices for the sake of human children, whose only force is the impotence of love, who accepts our rejection, inflicted pain, and outright disobedience in order to be faithful? If we take seriously the biblical testimony to a God who partners with us in the full sense of the word, then we will embrace this God and we will be transformed by this God. In the human form of Jesus, God goes further than we have seen God go before, all the way to death. Again, as Buttrick writes, the cross is not merely a heart flutter from an otherwise impassive God, or an exceptional concession of the divine sovereignty. No. Through the cross, we see into the mystery of God's own self-giving self. What so radically changes us in this revelation that ultimately our brokenness cannot break God, nor because we are bound to God can it break us. This life that God fashions cannot be crushed because God is inextricably part of it. As Paul says in his letter to the early Christians at Rome, what can separate us from the love of God? Nothing. Nothing in life nor in death, for we are more than conquerors through this one who loves us. Calloway's painting starkly illustrates the discordant, but dominant in the scape are also the vivid yellows of life-giving light, golden promise of restoration, the blues of the waters of creation, the verdant greens of this new life. Life beyond discord, life despite discord. Like the flower in yeast and bread, God is bound to us, bound with us in life, a living bread for the life of the world. Some emails to info@ are not responded to. There really is no point. There's not a question, there's a declaration. This was one that didn't warrant a response. I regret, however, not doing so, because I would like to have told him about the one who chooses in creation to become one with the created order, who chooses to be one with humanity in the fullness of humanity, who suffers when we suffer, rejoices when we rejoice, who laughs when we laugh, who grieves when we grieve, who, seeing how broken and sorrowful and mad and warring we all too often can be, longs to gather us together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, sheltering us from the scorching heat, the driving wind, and the cold of night. In the dark of lonely places, she gathers us into the net of her arms, holds us close, keeps us safe, and with us awaits the dawn of the day. Put your hope in God, declares the psalmist, for with God is unfailing love, and with God is fullness of being, fullness of whole life. So be it. Amen.